My name's Claire Rousey, and this is my Deep Digs.
Claire is an ambient composer and improviser who has just released a new album titled Sentiment on the Thrill Jockey label. This video finds Claire digging deep for some rare 90s vinyl, and with the new album just out, Claire has some other vinyl choices to make.
I was actually picking up vinyl colors today with the label.
Oh, good.
Because we're doing a repress, so it's exciting.
And how many will you press when you press, do you know?
I think the first run was like close to 1,000, and now we're doing another run of like 500 of another color, and then we're just going to keep doing like, I think, additions of like 500 as we need them.
Very good. So this is your first album or first release on Thrill Jockey. Is that a big deal for you? Does that affect anything? Yeah, tell me about it.
Like emotionally, just like personally, I am a huge fan of the music and the label and the scene that the label came out of in the 90s.
Right.
I loved all the music that was happening then, especially on like independent labels and stuff, and the Chicago scene, and like from like 94 to like 2002 was like really intense. And like I wasn't part of it. I just like got to experience it later in life from the outside. So I'm like significantly younger than
Chicago.
That.
Didn't Jeff Tweedy like save your butt after you got robbed or something?
He's a good guy.
What happened there?
Yeah, I got robbed. He sent me like a ton of stuff from their like loft studio, just kind of like being really nice. And that was the first time we talked. And then after that, we were kind of just buds. He invited me to play some shows and like open for him.
Oh,
so
cool.
I was doing some like ambient music opening for him for his like theater acoustic tour or whatever, and that was kind of weird. And we recorded some music together that's coming out at some point.
Ooh.
It's a lot of stuff, but he's really nice. The whole team over there is like really kind. I like definitely owe them a big one.
So does it feel like you're from different musical worlds than folks like Wilco and that? Because, you know, they've been around a while, sold a few copies of things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool to, like, I don't know. I was talking to Kevin Drew of Broken Social Scene earlier today, and it's just cool meeting these people from bands that I grew up listening to, and now they're, like, in my life in a weird way. But it's cool. Yeah, I feel like, you know, I'll have a conversation with these guys who are like indie rock dads. And then, I don't know, I'll like go and see somebody like play a noise show.
Right.
And it's just kind of like all of that in my mind is kind of one, just like one thing. Because it is kind of part of the greater whole. And also, like, I think a lot of people don't give artists who've been around a while and are popular or more popular than like the average person the credit they deserve, because a lot of them are like, they're deep heads, like they know, they have their finger on the pulse type thing. A lot of them are like way more in the cut, like they know deeper stuff than you give them credit for. So it's cool to see that being true.
Right. And do you see yourself making music when you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I was talking about this also the other day. My friend Wendy Eisenberg has a song about it, but like references being a lifer. And I want to be a lifer. I think that's like the thing for me. The song's called When I'm an Artist, but it's really, really good.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
My favorite artist, or my favorite band back in, I'm much older than you are, was a band called Mott the Hoople. And it was run by a guy named Ian Hunter, who today is also releasing an album. And he is just 2 months shy of his 85th birthday.
Whoa.
He's older than Dylan.
That's crazy.
And he's still out there doing it, you know? And it's like, what the heck? You know, and obviously he doesn't need to be doing it. There's something in him that he needs to express himself or whatever it is. And
he's like connected to Ringo, right?
Yeah, he's played with Ringo's All-Stars.
Okay. Yeah, that's okay. I was like, how do I know this person? But he had a Sorry, I
and
like...
he's got a and like everybody and his mother is on his record. Jeff Beck's last recordings and
That's
Taylor
crazy.
Hawkins and people like that
yeah.
and all these. Yeah, it's amazing. So
that's so cool.
Yeah. So when do you think? When did you become a lifer? When do you think you kind of made that transition to this is what I who I am and what I'm doing with my life?
Probably as like an early teenager. I was kind of just, I don't know. I was pretty disinterested in like anything that wasn't playing a show. So, or like going to band practice or like going
right.
to, going to the library and borrowing CDs to like rip them onto my computer type thing. Like,
right.
if I wasn't doing one of those three things, then I was kind of out of it and not really invested. So
right.
when I decided that, you know, those are the only things that mattered to me, I was like, okay, I got to like figure out how to get myself into a position that, you know, lets me do these
yep.
things all the time. And that's basically
yep.
all I do now. It's like, I wake up and I dig through the internet and the, like, I don't know, trying to find new music and listen to new music for a couple hours. And then I work on music and record and email people about music and then have practice and then do interviews. And
there you go.
And yeah, that's it. And then
it keeps you busy. Fills
yeah.
the day out.
Then usually around 5 or 6 o'clock at night, I turn it off and then I'm domestic. Right? I'm at home with the dog and my girlfriend and hanging out.
There you go. Excellent. Now, I read about a thing called the Flow Festival that you performed at
mm-hmm.
last year, I think it was, where it was kind of one of the first times you were performing some of these songs and singing. And I wonder if you can kind of tell me a little bit about what was going on in your head, what you're feeling like when you did that, because that feels to me like maybe that's the beginning of this album.
Yeah, I mean, like I've had the songs for quite a while, but that was the first time I like really like I was touring and it was in Finland, so I had to like ask for a backline, and I was like, can you rent this guitar, this amp, like, and I was like, well, they already rented the gear, so I can't back out now. And then I played the songs
right.
and singing and did a little bit of what I normally do and then did that. But that festival is like quite big. Like it
right.
was, I mean, I can't remember exactly who was headlining, but it was like big bands.
I
like
think Blur might've been.
Blur. That's right. Also, it was like one of those like rip kind of like buzzy pop bands. Yeah. So it was kind of strange, like playing a festival of that size.
Right.
Especially as like somebody who doesn't typically do song based material. So it was cool to do like songs for the first time at a festival like that. And since then I've kind of developed what I do and I don't know, like it's been a bit, the refining process has been kind of hard too, because I'm used to being a bit off the cuff and I mean, it's not so much anymore. I'm touring with like a somewhat of a band at this point.
Uh-huh.
So I got like string players with me and stuff. It's cool. But
yeah,
that festival was really strange. I was not expecting for my performance to be attended or reviewed at all, but it, both things happened.
Well, it seems to have gone well, so that's a plus.
Yeah, it was really cool though. And then I was so tired that I like fell asleep in the green room, and I woke up at like 11 o'clock at night when they were cleaning it up. I was so tired. I was like, I had traveled all day and I was real stressed out too. And I was just like, okay,
right.
I gotta knock this out. And then I asked somebody from the stage for a cigarette. And then I like walked all the way across like the audience area and then smoked a cigarette. And then I like fell asleep backstage.
Man. So obviously you're kind of pushing yourself musically and physically to make music and to make this record. Why are you doing that? You could be just doing the same thing that you've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years and people would be pretty happy, right?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I like to try things I haven't done before. And I kind of, I don't know, when I decided that this was going to be a record, I decided that once I got comfortable with it, I would start doing things that I didn't know how to do. So as I keep going, I start kind of adding things to my plate that are new experiences. Because if I'm going to be in this position where I'm getting asked to do stuff, and even if I don't know how to do it, I'm trying to figure out how to do it. So I'm touring right now with like a set design.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm the album cover, I'm recreating that bedroom. So I'm traveling these huge walls, like they fold out like on like right? springs, yeah, big collapsible walls, and then a bed, and posters, and like, I don't know, it's, and like a lamp and like all this stuff. And I'm like, I've never done set design before, but I decided to give it a shot.
Yeah.
Singing songs live, playing guitar, having a band, like all of that stuff is pretty new.
Yeah.
And even now, like getting asked to do like workshops or like talking, like speaking at things, or like doing outreach for like mental health stuff. Like a lot of people have been just asking me to get involved in different things that I haven't done before. So I'm trying right. to do it all. Working with new people, like I've been kind of like connecting more with people on like the like contemporary hip hop world, and like just like very, very lightly dipping my toes in different places that I haven't been before.
Can you rap?
No, but I can, I can chop things up for other people.
Gotcha. Now, my understanding is the first track on the record, 4 p.m., that recorded voice at the beginning, you had sent that out to several people, and tell me the
yeah
what really happened.
It was part of a commission I got. I asked to play this show in Paris for a festival in 2021, I think.
Right.
And part of the festival's thing was like, I get to perform it in this space and like diffuse the sound through a bunch of different speakers. And I was like, I want a different voice recording for each speaker I'm diffusing. So I got as many as I could from my friends reading this text. And one of them just kind of struck me as like the focal point. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to isolate this one and then use it for the first track on the record.
It's 4 p.m. on a Monday and I cannot stop sobbing. I haven't been able to eat or sleep or leave the bed for days. Crying every single day for the past 20 days. Now that I type it out, that seems like an obvious red flag. Something is wrong.
That's my friend Theodore Schaefer. He's an amazing musician and composer based in Queens, New York right now.
Queens, oh, okay. So do you do a lot of field recording? Are you thinking about recording all the time? If you're out at dinner with somebody, are they worried that you're going to be
all the recording? Sometimes, yeah. I try not to do that anymore. Got in trouble too. But I do like try to catch stuff when I'm out. My phone is full of like automatically like marks the location. So one of those recordings on the record, the second to last track, is actually that exact thing. It's like a phone recording that just came from straight from my
That's
iPhone.
What, Sunset Boulevard?
Yeah. 181. It's like just straight from the phone. So I do catch stuff like that a lot and try to incorporate it as best I can. But
right. and do people that your friends and your collaborators, how do they react when you suddenly they find themselves on your record?
I usually ask first, but yeah, it's kind of helpful when you do that. But usually it goes over pretty okay. A lot of their stuff, like instrumentalists, even I record with my phone, or like the handheld recorder. So it's
nice.
Yeah, it's cool to have like somebody that plays an instrument that you don't play. And just ask them to play something and record it really fast and then base like a whole track off of that. Once you get back to the studio, it's
right.
like kind of like a flipped way of working. Like you would think you would layer on these like additional things later, or like these like sparse pieces of instrumentation, but I kind of flip it around and just work around the initial recording that was like caught my attention enough to ask to record it.
Okay. Now, one track I wanted to touch on, if you don't mind, is the fifth track, which I don't know how to pronounce it, III or?
Yeah, three.
Three. That's good. And you've got a couple of people, Julia and Emily, playing cello and violin, but it has a nice kind of a drony, Velvet Underground-y, Nico-y feel about
it. Yeah.
I just saw that Nico's this has just been reissued.
Whoa.
Are you familiar with that record?
Oh yeah, Desert yeah. Shore. Yeah, it's the best Nico record.
So if you want to have anything more to add on that track, I'd love to hear it.
Was recorded in Cologne. I was doing a residency there, and they provided me with instrumentalists to record basically like for a whole day. It's just like, if you have music for them or any ideas, we can sit down and you can tell them what to play and they'll play it.
Right.
And they have the studio set up for me, which is really nice. So that piece was like basically the Emily and Julia like sitting across the room playing, and then I'm on the other side of the room, and I'm basically just being like, next time I want them to change notes. So they're like droning on a D and I'm like, change notes now.
Right.
And they get to decide. It was kind of like a game we were playing. I was like, you can start on this note and then you can either play this note or this note. And they have to kind of change at the same time. So they like glide into it. And it's like, most of the time it's complementary, like, and just like in a harmonic sense, but sometimes it does clash. And which is cool, but you have this like this drone going the whole time, and then I built some electronics around it, and then I resampled the cello a lot, and I built like a virtual instrument using a sample from the cello to kind of build out that low end.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of it's influenced by like this a lot of the Velvet Undergroundy kind of like the Kale contributions.
Yes.
It's funny
you know who
you caught
Tony
that.
Conrad was?
Yeah, totally.
I saw him once here. He played in Auckland about 25 years ago, and it was maybe in a place. It was like almost like a cement building, and there was 500, 600 people there, and all he did the whole show, he sat up in a window or like a little crevice in the back, so all you could see was a shadow of him sawing away on what he was, and he just. He played like one drone for like 2 hours, and that was it. And it was like you could tell it was like who's going to be able to sit through this? You know, there were people leaving and couldn't handle it.
That's crazy.
Quite the experience.
Whoa, yeah. That's amazing. That sounds so cool, especially like that's an amazing. What was the building called that it was in?
It was called Hopetown Alpha.
Hopetown Alpha. Is it still around?
Yeah. Yep. It's still sitting there just down here in Auckland, but it doesn't get used much anymore, but it should be.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I'm like looking at it right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that just sounds interesting. I wanted to look it up.
All right. Well, you need to come and play there.
I know. I would love to. That's crazy.
We can get you started, I'm sure. Yeah. It was definitely a test of wills to see if you could, you know.
That's amazing, though.
Yeah, so your live shows, what are they turning out to be like now that you've got a band and you're singing and you got a record and all the trappings of that?
It's usually like kind of like on and off, like song form type thing that we're doing, pretty similar to the records, like instrumentation and like arrangement. And then what I'm doing is I'm picking up improvisers who I play with normally in every city that I'm playing in. It's like instrumentalists and like collaborators that I have.
Yeah.
Depending on whatever city I'm in, those are the people that I'll be playing with me. So it's like I have like one or two people who will like travel with me and do like a lot of the shows. So I have like a core member. And then I add on people. So we play a song and then the improvisers will play and I'm kind of like dictating what they do in these improvised sections. But really the goal is to like get improvisers that I'm like a fan of or friends with that, you know, these two people that may not always play together, but I want to hear them together. So it's kind of like my fun way of like forcing the collaboration to happen. So it's like, we'll do a song and then an improvised piece, a song, an improvised piece. But it's a lot of like me fading myself out to like see how they work together on a musical level, which should be really interesting. A lot. I mean, I have like so many friends that I'm playing shows with over the next 2 months. A lot of like,
so really, like every show is going to be different. Then it's
yeah, uniquely, like the structure is the same, but the instrumentalists change. So it'll be pretty right. cool. And I'm kind of in charge. So and I also like haven't really been. I'm not very good at like dictating. So it's kind of it's like a lot of freedom for the people playing.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like fun. So do you see yourself coming down to possibly?
I would love the show to.
Down Under.
Yeah, I would love to. The last time I played shows over there, I never got to hit New Zealand. So I've yet to actually play a show over there, but I really want to come down and do Australia, New Zealand. It was going to happen at some point this year, and then it got the plans got foiled. So hopefully it can happen later in the year. Okay. There have been some talks about it. There have also been talks about Japan. It's not that those places are particularly close. But
we're practically neighbors.
But coming from coming from LA, it would make more definitely. Sense to do the whole loop. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Hope to see you at the Hopetown Alpha sometime soon.
I know. We'll make it happen. Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.